Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the founder of Regeneration Projects, a small business that sees two great bays and a river as our most important business partners. We started at a kitchen table during Melbourne's epic COVID-19 lockdown, and now we're a B Corp and actor in the UN decade on ecosystem restoration. As we begin this episode, we'd like to acknowledge the two great bays, Port Phillip and Western Port, which are known to First Peoples as Nam and Wurrumbirrin, or Murrumbik. Without the bays and the Birrarung Yarra River, we wouldn't be in business today. So we show deep respect to First Nations elders, past and present, who for over 60,000 years have cared for the bays, Birrarung, and their catchment areas. Their ecological knowledge inspires us to practice business in partnership with nature. Now, choosing a career that tackles environmental issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, or pollution can be incredibly rewarding, but also super tough. When we listen to the stories of passionate and pioneering professionals, it stokes our inner fire and belief so that we can keep doing the work that we know needs to be done to benefit future generations. That's what the Two Bays podcast is all about. Stories of hope, grit, and determination, inspiring the planet's next generation of ecological leaders and entrepreneurs. This series is made in partnership with the Mornington Peninsula Shire Council and celebrates the stories of business and community champions at the forefront of local climate action. Let's tune in. Womandika, welcome and come with purpose to the Two Bays podcast. My name's Matt Sykes, and along with Claire Wild, we're taking another step on the journey through this series focused on climate action. And this one, we'll actually be diving into nature, the intersection of nature, biodiversity, and climate, and looking at the role of different actors, whether they're in the public sector or private landholders or business actors, and see how we can work together better to create not only better outcomes for climate, but also for nature and for our local economies. Joining us today is Ben Cullen, the South Central Area Manager at Trust for Nature. Before we begin, we'll just take a moment to acknowledge those connections to country. Ben's working across quite an area, so we'll perhaps extend that to the broader Kulin Nation, each of the language groups, of course, the Boomerang and Bunurong peoples of that are connected to the Two Bays and the Mornington Peninsula, but the Wathaurong to the west, the Jajawurrung, the Tungurrung, and the Woiwurrung that make up those five different language groups as part of the broader Kulin Nation. And of course, their incredible wealth of ecological knowledge that continues to be passed on through those elders past and present. Ben, thanks so much for jumping onto the podcast. And as you stepped in, you literally have come from the forest. When you're walking through the forest, you're sensing that connection to nature, what are the things that, remind you of the climate that we're living in and maybe even some of the signs of climate change that might become visible?
Oh, great question, and thanks for having me here. I reckon you guys are doing a great job with this work, and I'm very pleased to be a part of it. Climate change is very much top of mind. I've just come from a site that is totally surrounded by suburbia, and there's this one patch of bush that's been left. And it stands out, it's about 10 acres, totally surrounded by a sea of houses that go on for ages. And in this forest, it's this beautiful remnant of what once was, and there's habitat clinging onto it. There's species that aren't known from the local area anymore who are still doing well in this little space. And it just reminds me and excites me to think that we can still protect places, we can still have homes and habitats for the species that are so unique to the areas that we live, and look after all the things that mean so much to us, for our mental well-being, for conservation, for our cultural heritage, for all sorts of reasons. There's places out there that we can work with.
Ben, I think that point you've just made around the many, many different benefits, or you could even say different types of contributions that nature make to our lives is so important. You talked about how creating those spaces for natural, for species to live in, also creates so many benefits for individuals in terms of all different types of their well-being and connection to nature and all that kind of stuff. I'd love to take that back and understand how that relates to your work at Trust for Nature. So in particular, can you tell us a little bit more about what Trust for Nature does and sort of how you contribute to that wonderful explanation that you just gave around the value of nature and protecting that?
Yeah, Trust for Nature is a wonderful organisation. I've been working there for almost 17 years myself, so I've had a huge history with it, and I'm very passionate about it. And I guess to stay working in an organisation like that, you have to really believe in the cause, and you have to really believe that this vessel that we have of our organisation can make change. And that's, as a conservationist and a committed conservationist, that's what I want to be doing in life. And I really feel like this vessel, sorry to keep using that phrase, but is something that's really driving towards that. And so what Trust for Nature does is we work with private landholders predominantly to permanently protect areas around Victoria. We do that in a number of ways, by placing conservation covenants that are in perpetuity. So no matter how many times the property changes hands, that property will have a covenant that protects those values that are so unique to that site. We also visit the properties and note changes over time. We can have 30, 40 years of history that we can follow, watch species come and go, watch changes in the landscape, and then share that with future owners and people who are working in the space. And we also work to strategically purchase reserves and through revolving fund or through strategic purchases that can be protected into the future and target sort of the threatened species and communities that are most at risk. For myself, I got involved in Trust for Nature when I was a kid. There was a patch of forest, which is Greens Bush on the Mornings Peninsula. I don't know if some of you are aware of it, part of the Mornings Peninsula National Park. It's an absolutely stunning place. And it was subdivided to the extent where the drawings were done and everything was set to go ahead. And luckily, the Victorian Conservation Trust, who later became Trust for Nature, set up a public appeal where $1 million was raised. And then that money was then matched further by the state government, and all Greens Bush was purchased and made into a national park that we can all enjoy today. So because of my early knowledge of that and growing up on the peninsula, born on the peninsula, I was passionate to work for an organisation like that who can make change and harness community energy to get good outcomes.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story and a wonderful reflection on that childhood experience, Ben. I think a lot of us have had maybe parallel experiences where there's been something really formative that's happened in our childhood that has really shaped the decisions that we make in our careers, and in particular sort of leaning us towards things relating to climate action and protecting biodiversity and all that kind of thing. You said that you've been at Trust for Nature for 17 years. You must have seen a lot in that time. And in particular, I'm really curious to hear if you have any reflections on the words conservation and regeneration. I know that often we talk about regeneration as being a relatively new concept. And I can say in my own experience anyway, conservation was something that was talked about a lot, perhaps over the past couple of decades. And now I'm noticing that people are talking a little bit more, or maybe replacing the word conservation with regeneration, or that idea of giving back more than we take. I'm really curious if you've had any experiences in the way that we talk or perceive nature and conservation, regeneration, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably the root of some of that is the meaning of conservation has changed in that 17 years itself, even longer in my, I've worked further in conservation on the Mornings Peninsula longer than that 17 years, but our knowledge around what best practices are for conservation and our knowledge about the different aspects of conservation are evolving all the time. So what it meant to me 17 years ago is definitely different to what it means to me today. And I think as we learn, as we grow, as we learn from our traditional owners, as they raise their voice and explain more about what we can do to protect land and look after it the right way, we also have all sorts of studies and things coming through and helping to influence us how we can make the best impact to conservation. I think we know when we're working in conservation, it's a finite resource. We don't always have the ability to do everything we want, or even anything we want in some instances. So it's about finding out what can create the biggest impact, where can we get change, where can we preserve things. Conservation is all about preservation. Where can we use our time, our energy to protect the most species, protect the most habitats and things like that. Regeneration is huge. We now know that it's not just about planting trees. I mean, that was the old concept. And planting trees can be really important, don't get me wrong. I don't mean it like that. I mean that we now know that we can facilitate landscapes to regenerate themselves. We can play part in natural cycles and figuring out ways that we can remove some of the threats and lead to better outcomes. So conservation and regeneration are buzz terms, but they're buzz terms for a reason, because they're part of the barometer of how we need to change to make sure that we're getting the best impact.
That's an incredibly cool reflection, Ben. I think often in the world of sustainability and regeneration, it's really easy to get stuck in the buzzwords and trying to focus too much on unpacking exactly what each one means. And I think the way that you've described conservation and regeneration, both have really important merits and both have played a really important role in what I feel is our ultimate goal of helping people and the planet to be well, and to recover from a few centuries really of not very good treatment. So it's really nice to hear you speak about it in that way. I'd love now to hear, kind of coming back to more of the tangible side of things, an example of perhaps a project you've worked on, or something specific that you've worked on with Trust for Nature that you have felt has been really impactful and made a real difference.
Yeah, well, over that time, there's been a lot of things, but probably to keep it peninsula-centric, because I do have, and I shouldn't admit this, but I do have a slight bias towards the peninsula being my home, birthplace and things like that. But working at Tookaruk Swamp has been a huge highlight of my career, my life and everything. Not to get too autobiographical, but I used to catch a bus that used to drive through this bump, and the bump was actually the bus going through the depression of sort of the swamp that is part of Tookaruk Swamp. And that bump didn't mean that much to me, but you'd see a sea of Phragmites and you'd see this large sort of area, and occasionally it would get flooded out at times and we'd have to take a different route. But Tookaruk Swamp is one of those places that's common to a lot of people on the peninsula, but they might not realize that there's this vast area of swampland that's largely privately owned. And so as soon as I worked for Trust for Nature, I was thinking, I've got to find a way to work with the landholders to make sure that this swamp's protected into the future. And at the time, we know it had a lot of conservation values. We know it had old growth Muna trees. It's got, it had migratory birds that are traveling from all around the world just to sort of pass by and congregate in these spots. It's such an important spot. But working with the landholders was going to be a task to see how we could find out if we can figure out what their drivers are and what we need to protect versus what they're looking to do with the land in the future. And through a few exciting sort of maneuvers, we're able to get conservation covenant agreements to permanently protect the majority of Tookaruk Swamp, which has been absolutely exciting. And throughout that time of placing those agreements and then facilitating some work on those properties, we've been able to see things like Australasian bitterns, southern emu wrens, some really locally rare or nationally endangered species utilizing those spots. We find out more about it and we can work across a broader landscape with more landholders who are protecting their properties.
I know the swamp that you're talking about very well, Ben, and one of the things that is an image in my mind driving or moving through there is I think there's a swamp harrier that will patrol, you know, that spot. And yeah, just to hear about the specific species, in this case bird species, which you know, are so vital to the biodiversity, but also to, yeah, that experience of being on the peninsula as a local, or if you're a visitor and doing a trip, you know, these might be some of the closest wildlife encounters that you might have in your life, you know. And it's amazing to hear that, yeah, that instance was, I guess, catalyst for being able to create some of those positive outcomes. Sometimes we do have this image, though, of development being a bit of a counter to conservation and regeneration. But are you noticing a bit of a shift in the way that businesses and the private sector are relating to nature and, I guess, looking, dare I use another buzzword, this idea of becoming nature positive, where we can actually create a net positive impact where, you know, an ecosystem, a place is stronger in terms of its biodiversity and those values, you know, after something that they might invest in. But things are changing, aren't they?
Absolutely. Tookaroog Swamp is an example of a private landholder who actually did receive funds through an offset to not only protect it, and I think partly he's done that altruistically, but the ongoing management of that site over 10 years was funded through means of an offset, which meant that works were channeled into the site and really utilized to expand on that. Those funds wouldn't have been around otherwise. And so by that injection of funding from outside of that landholder have meant that that site is in incredible condition now and an important biolink and an area that expands the genetic diversity capabilities across the peninsula, because it's quite a huge node. It's a big habitat patch, the Tookaroog Swamp, and other spots do trickle from it in sort of habitat links. So it's a really important place, and having injections from different funding sources means we can make a lot of change. We've had philanthropic donations from individuals or organizations that have meant that we've been able to do conservation work on the peninsula that would never have been done before. It's meant that we can utilize those funds, and using that prioritization I was talking about before in terms of figuring out where you can get the best impacts and making change like that. So there are plenty of ways that private industries and individuals can actually impact, not only just by, and I shouldn't say just, but not only by getting out there and doing work themselves, but also if they've got a capacity to support the work. There's a lot of great initiatives happening at the moment where you can get behind, you can be part of the solution, and you can be part of conservation and regeneration, those really important things that we were talking about before. I think, but we're all working towards this goal of biodiverse places. We want as much biodiverse areas that we can. And the more diversity there is in life, the more life there is in general in this space. So we're all working towards this goal of trying to create these hyper sort of areas of life where there's all these species that unique to our areas are being preserved and can serve as sort of the future, our seed stocks, our everything, our habitat areas for when we look and see if we can expand out from these places. How effective can we make conservation over time, and how can we invest in these places so we can spread that out over time and make even more impact? And we want a perfect scenario is where we're all living happily on the peninsula with these beautiful conservation areas that connect up, that allow for species to continue on for generations and generations. We can learn from it, and we can have better, healthier lives because of it.
Yeah, and that health that we've been circling around, it does come in many forms, and there are, I guess we could talk about it as a phrase of or an idea of ecosystem services. So these ecosystems, these habitats actually create a number of different benefits into the human community. And one of those relates specifically to some of those climate benefits where we're seeing a need to be able to retain carbon in soils, retain carbon in trees and in biomass, and also to draw down more because of that warming climate that we're seeing. Is there an example that comes to mind where you've been able to see a property or a project? It might be still on the Tuckeruk Swam, or it might be elsewhere on the peninsula, but where you've seen a positive outcome for, let's say, climate and biodiversity, but also for business or a specific development?
Yeah, I think I'll stick to Tuckeruk. There are plenty of other examples, but to keep it sort of localized, if we think about Tuckeruk, it has an outlet that goes into Port Phillip Bay. So Port Phillip Bay is obviously one of the huge tourism draw cards that we have on the Mornington Peninsula. People come from all over the place just to come down for a swim, to hang around on the beach, eat an ice cream, do whatever. And there's all sorts of, as we know, so many businesses linked to that tourism economy that's based on that. These ecosystems that we're helping to protect and permanently protect all have impacts. They're all connected. And so the health of the swamp plays a vital role in terms of the health of Port Phillip Bay and its entrance points and things like that as well. So what we know is that by exactly that terminology that you're using, if we're looking at ecosystem services, we need to protect what we have and we need to get them in the healthiest condition possible. So their influence, say into Port Phillip Bay, can make sure that we have cleaner water, nicer places to swim, nicer places to visit, and so we're not going backwards. And you can imagine what the adverse idea of this would be if we were to allow some of our tourism hotspots to go backwards in terms of their condition. So it's so important that we look at these areas, look at how the impacts they have on private business, and consider that when we're thinking about preservation and conservation and things.
That's such an interesting reflection. I think something that we see a lot, in particular with things like reporting legislation and stuff that's coming in, like if I throw around some acronyms, you know, TNFD, science-based targets for nature, all that kind of stuff, I think lots of organisations are really having their eyes opened to the risks that inaction on preserving and regenerating nature will have from a real business perspective. And I think starting to that example that you gave, Ben, where sort of businesses are understanding what that relationship is with their success as a business and also the health of our planet is a really interesting one. And I really hope that we keep having those conversations and that our economy finds that balance, or maybe balance is the wrong word, finds a new way of working. Where we can value the success of our business, and maybe we define success in a slightly different way, alongside the health of our planet and also people. So very interesting reflection to share. Before we wrap up, I would love for us to use the benefit of hindsight to think right back to the very start of your conservation, climate action, nature, biodiversity journey. And you can go back as far as you like. It sounds like you've had some really formative experiences on this from your childhood, really. So if you'd like, you can think all the way back to then. But I'd really love to hear if you have any advice that you'd give your past self before you embarked on this journey of climate action.
I think things that have been really amazing is that local extinctions don't usually make the news. We might lose a species off the Mornington Peninsula, and we have in my lifetime. I've watched things in nature that don't occur there anymore become locally extinct. And that's something you don't realise it's happened till after it's happened, in a sense, too. You can see a trend towards it happening, and once it's happened, then you get into this situation where you've lost something out of a landscape that's been there for hundreds of thousands and thousands of years, sort of thing. We are really at the precipice of conservation, and we're really at a time where we can make change. So every effort we can do, whoever we can work with, and collaborating is such a great measure to do that. So if you can work with private, if you can work with public, if you can work with whatever you can just to get outcomes, that's going to be great, because we're all working towards the common goal. And it doesn't matter who gets the win or whatever you want to call it. It's about getting areas protected in whatever way we can. And there's different types of knowledge that people have. There's different skill sets that people have. And if we can all utilize those different things, we can get an outcome that'll work for us. We can get an outcome that's going to work for private industry and get an outcome that's going to work for someone who's just wants to walk their dog somewhere or do something like that. All these outcomes are not mutually exclusive. There's something we can work towards as a common goal. And I think in my experience, the best thing we can do is find the areas that we want to look after and look after them and do whatever we can. There's a chance for people to be parochial. You might have your backyard patch that you really care about. That's fantastic. It all adds up in the long term. You might have a big patch you want to work with other people on. It's all about working together to preserve these areas. And like I think I've said it too many times, but we have such a unique environment that we're working with, such unique species and communities. Something that's locally common to us might be internationally significant sort of thing in terms of its population. There's work there for us to do to preserve those things. And there might be little actions or big actions, but they'll lead to really, really big outcomes if we do it. And we might not even realize for the future how important that little action back then really was. And yeah, so I would encourage anyone to get involved in nature conservation. I work for Trust for Nature because it's about conserving nature. We're trying to put things in place now, like anything we can do to support landholders to go on that journey of protecting their own properties. There's now a land tax exemption if you place a Trust for Nature covenant on your property as well. There's various incentives around to support people to do that. And like what you guys are doing, getting the word out there, reaching new audiences and reaching new people, it's all so important.
Thank you, Ben. It's really inspiring to hear you talk through your own personal experience and the passion that you've got, because it really feels like such a strong stream of work and energy that you've put into this, and no doubt that's reflected in your own family as well. But I think it's really refreshing and inspiring, particularly for a younger generation of leader coming through that have that care for the planet and climate action and so on, and to think about the way that they might shape their own career. Something you just mentioned, knowledge and different kinds of knowledges. And we talk about ecological literacy or ecological knowledge, and certainly our First Peoples across Australia are incredible teachers and culture carriers in that way. But I guess something that, as we start to mainstream this awareness about the value of nature, there also needs to be this mainstreaming of enabler of also environmental education or knowledge, and not as its own sector sitting within the conservation sector. And, you know, all the people that love nature and have child experiences connected to nature, go and work over there, because we want them right throughout our society. One thing that I think we do see is that as students transition from high school into university or other career pathways, sometimes we do get kind of pigeonholed. I'd be curious to hear your thought on how you see this next generation evolving, and what's your take on the importance of an understanding of nature in the way that we live and work in general, whether we choose a path to work in local government or state government, or whether we choose a path to run a small business, or we get involved in community sports and different things. But all of those roles, those hats, they involve nature. How do you think we embed that ecological literacy more into our society, and what's the role of this next generation?
I think it's a great question and a great concept for sure. My personal experience around this has been working for the last 7 years. We've been working on something called the Warren Beak Rangers Program, and that was set up with various elders from the Kulin Nation coming together and saying that they wanted to empower First Nations people by setting up a Cert 3 in conservation and ecosystem management for them, specifically where they could share knowledge as well as learn from other elders and community members and experts and things like that. And I think it's been absolutely amazing. I've been privileged to have been there since the start, with people like Rhys Collins and Uncle Dave Wandon, and the Bunurong Land Council. All these people have been involved in putting together this course that meant that it's open to everyone. It's totally free. It's for First Nations people, sorry, specifically. And we've learned so much in the sharing of knowledge that's happened around there. And so from my experience over that 7 years, watching people go on to different careers and have such an impact in conservation and have such an impact in following their dreams the way they should see it should happen, it's helped empower a lot of the peninsula by learning that knowledge from the people who've done the course, but also empower them with the confidence and training that they wanted to go on and do other things. In my experience of watching that, it's been absolutely incredible to see how they go on to these goals and do things in a way that is really about making change, is very respectful to First Nations people all across Australia, and leads to on-ground outcomes that we really can share and learn from. And I think it's been a big thing in recent years to see how much traditional owner knowledge is shaping conservation and how we can use that knowledge to get safer communities, healthier communities, and all sorts of things. Seeing that happen, I can really see that there's such a positive change happening, and there's things happening that we're going to see great people move on and become leaders and do really great things. And I really see this space in every organization to be considering the conservation values of the work you do. And I hope more and more people step up and teach us all about how we can have a bigger impact.
Sensational, Ben. And that's such an exciting thing for this next generation to look forward to being part of, that rekindling of cultural and cultural knowledge, but also the regeneration of country. And it's almost that thing as you're talking, it's that idea of caring for country as country cares for us, and that reciprocity that we have. There's a wisdom there that feels very relevant to business, but also to all aspects of life. Ben Cullen, it's been amazing to learn about your role as the South Central Area Manager at Trust for Nature. Your passion, from that childhood experience of a bit of land that was cut up and ready or earmarked for development, and then community environmental organisations rallying together and say, hey, that's not the way that we want to go. And just the way that those little things can become big things as you, you know, progress throughout your career. Thanks for spending so much time with us and sharing these insights. So on behalf of Claire and I and the Two Bays podcast, all the best for now. How amazing are those Mornington Peninsula climate champions? Must be something in the water. Against the odds, they're transforming climate anxiety into climate action. Keep your eyes out for new episodes coming soon. So you're feeling inspired and ready to act. What can you do next? Firstly, subscribe to the Two Bays podcast on your favorite channel. Then visit the Regeneration Project's website for more info about our ecological leadership and strategic consultancy work. Lastly, don't forget to follow Regeneration Projects on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, as well as subscribe to our seasonal newsletter. My name is Matt, and on behalf of Regeneration Projects and the Two Bays, thank you for tuning in, and see you on the next episode of Two Bays, a Business and a Kitchen Table podcast.